So our talk this evening will be given by Boundless Way Dharma teacher Jeff Sewell. Great to have you with us tonight.
So this is a case from the Blue Cliff Record. Emperor Wu of Liang invited Mahasattva Fu to lecture on the Diamond Sutra. On the rostrum, Mahasattva Fu struck the lectern once with his stick and immediately climbed down. The emperor was astounded. Master Zi asked, "Your Majesty, do you understand?" "No, I do not." "Mahasattva Fu has finished the lecture." So I began looking for a koan with which to begin this talk about a week ago. And I started by poking around the territory in our koan curriculum where I've been wandering recently, looking for inspiration. And I didn't find it. And I had the thought to go to the beginning of the koan curriculum, the miscellaneous koan collection, and look for inspiration there. And I did. And I didn't find it. And so I decided to kind of work my way forward back to where I'd begun my search, this territory I've been wandering around in recently, and sort of scan all the koans in between, looking for inspiration, looking for this koan. And I did that, and still came up short. I actually began to peek ahead of the next koan I'll bring to Dokson. I hope that's okay. Still looking for inspiration. And in the survey of the koan curriculum, no single koan jumped out and declared, "Pick me." But what did leap out from this exercise were a couple of themes. I thought I'd make those the subject of my talk. There are obviously many, many themes that could leap out from our rich koan collections. And these are just what kind of struck me during this exercise. And I mainly want to focus on the second theme, but I need to touch briefly on the first to set up the second. And when I get to the second, it'll be clear why I ultimately chose the koan with which I opened. So the first theme. During this exercise, it became, it sort of hit me more than it ever has before how koan work, and how really I think more generally the whole Zen project, at least in my experience, is in part about examining our relationship with real and perceived constraints. Many of the early koans that we work with, it struck me, are about challenging our sense of what's possible. And so getting us to examine what we experience in life as constraints. Stop the sound of that distant temple bell. Count all the stars in the heavens. Say something without moving your lips or your tongue. And many of our koans even use images of physical entrapment. You find yourself at the bottom of a 200-foot well. What do you do? I think many of us, perhaps most of us, certainly me, came to this Zen project feeling trapped somehow. There was a part of us that felt cut off from other parts, mind or spirit trapped in a body. Maybe we feel like a solitary being, somehow isolated from the world we inhabit. Maybe we feel like a being among other beings who are all inhabiting a realm that somehow is not all there is. There must be something more. There's some sort of dualism we're experiencing, some version of heaven and earth or heaven and hell. We're sure there must be someplace else we have to get, something more to know. And we sense that Zen might just offer us a map to the secret passageway we're looking for, and offer us a key to open the door once we find it. And it struck me that many of the early koans, in particular, kind of meet us where we're at in that regard. They indulge this sense that there's something more, even as they begin to challenge us to see that the something more is just this. In scanning the many koans as I did, I had the sense that progressively, you know, the heat is turned up in this regard. We're challenged more and more directly. This zinger, for instance, also from the Blue Cliff record. A monk said to Datsui, "When the thousands of universes are all together and utterly destroyed in the Kalpa fire, I wonder whether this perishes." "This perishes," said Datsui. "If so," persisted the monk, "does it follow the other?" "It follows the other," said Datsui. And so it goes on and on until the end of the koan curriculum, where I understand we meet the precepts as koans. And I suppose perhaps along the way we hopefully find some help through koan practice and sitting practice and life practice in letting go of perceived constraints and accepting those constraints that we must accept, like sickness, old age, and death, for instance, and perhaps seeing them in a new light. And the open secret, of course, is that the freedom that we have been seeking is found right here in the realm of constraint, not someplace else. And there's a through the looking glass quality to grasping this, I think. Straining to see through the looking glass, things appear faint and blurry. And passing through, I find myself, same old me. Relatively speaking, it seems like there's something to grasp, something to get, and absolutely not so much. And so the second theme, and it may be more of a a device or a conceit in the koans, in many of our koans, than a theme. I don't know, but many, if not the vast majority of koans, or the kind of setup is an encounter between a wise teacher and a seemingly less wise student. And sometimes there's a supporting character, a third supporting character in the koan, who seems to be in the know, like Master Z in the koan with which I opened. Or another example is Maha Kasyapa, the student, and we're told in the koan, the only person who smiled knowingly when the Buddha gave a sermon by simply twirling a flower. And in these koans, we might be inclined to identify more, perhaps, with Master Z or Maha Kasyapa. You know, if we think we see to the heart of the koan, you know, we too get it. But I'm not focused on these characters. As I was surveying these many koans, I really began to focus on the seeming stooges, the hapless students, the ones who just don't seem to get it. And I found myself really drawn to them, really appreciating them, even being inspired by them. I realized along the way, here I was, you know, I was this searching for inspiration and insight, wandering around, and sensing that I was beginning to find it in and among other people who are wandering around searching for inspiration and insight. Not knowing is the most intimate, we like to say. Only I don't know. But, you know, is there still a hint of special knowledge in our not knowing? It occurred to me that if we're identifying primarily with Mahasattva Fu or Master Z, perhaps there is. If we think there's something to get that Emperor Wu has not yet gotten, perhaps there is. I think we can settle into this not knowing and importantly, perhaps come to approach life somewhat less anxiously, perhaps. We may find the questions, some questions that Emperor Wu still wrestles with, progressively sort of losing their hold on us. Might come to feel a little more at home with ourselves, at home in the universe. But Maha Sattva Fu, Master Z, and even Emperor Wu, each one of them is presenting himself. They're all presenting themselves together with integrity. Each one of them is an aspect of who we are. I especially appreciate how Emperor Wu, or the hapless student in so many koans, tends to shine a light on that frame of mind from which we think there's something to get, something special. And by God, I think I have it. Shines a light on my own haplessness and ignorance. Shines a light on the tendency from that frame of mind to miss the opportunities that the things in life I experience as constraints are actually presenting to me. And if, on the other hand, you tend to be somebody who identifies with Emperor Wu, poor old, picked upon Emperor Wu all too easily, then based on this little trip through our koans, I would say, good for you. Emperor Wu was astounded. What a wonderful response to this. Not knowing is the most intimate.
I invite you to sit comfortably, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue, which is our opportunity for publicly expressing our being astounded or our not knowing, whatever flavor position you're in right now. We invite you to raise your hand and come forward.
He's in he's in a handful of cards, isn't
right.
he? He's just lovely.
It's that great other I don't know.
Yeah.
In the first case in Blue Bluff.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, he's often portrayed as the stooge, but I was actually reading through John Terrence's book the other day, Bring Me the Rhinoceros, and he really, of course, we're dreaming into all of these characters, like there's inadequate information in all the koans, so we're sort of making it up, and John Terrence was dreaming into Emperor Wu as this very sincere practitioner who knew that even though he'd done all this good stuff, it wasn't enough, and really gave him a slightly new spin, not just the stooge. So
yeah.
All of it there.
Yeah. Also, he's the emperor of China.
Yeah.
Right.
Not a stooge.
Yeah.
He can get just chop off these people's heads. He's very, very strong.
Yeah.
He's like the part of ourselves that, hey, I really want to know this stuff.
It's funny, I realized how that there were these, sometimes the stooge was this prominent person, and I read these cones and I'm thinking, the prominent people seem to, on first blush, to fare particularly poorly in these cones sometimes, and I'm thinking, maybe that's kind of a PC, reading of it or whatever, something else going on here.
I think there might be something else. It's just a theory.
Yeah.
There's something wonderful about stooges. Not the three stooges.
There's something
wonderful. Two.
In Shakespeare, the fools always hit the best lines.
Yeah. Well, and I think you pointed to something so important, Jeff, in the way we work with koans, that we have to go into every character and know them all intimately. So you can't just other the stooges.
Yeah.
You actually have to bring them into your own heart just as much as the other characters. you know, that appear to be getting off some good lines.
Right, that's where the insight is.
Yeah, because we contain all those different types in us. And right from the very first koan that we work with, we have to get inside Jiaozhou and we have to get inside the monk asking the question, you know, does a dog have Buddha nature, really? And why, you know, but we have to see through both of their eyes. And I think you really named that very well.
And it's one of the unique things about the koan tradition and the Zen tradition is the wisdom literature that includes the one who doesn't know.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not
the
just the expounding by the teachers, but it's something happening. I love what you're pointing to that. It's something happening between this authentic meeting of people where they are.
Where they are.
Yeah.
Well, and sometimes you even have the great masters saying things like, I don't know, go ask somebody else. You know, there's that too. There's many kinds of foolishness.
In the samadhi of play koans, mm-hmm. where teachers or students come together and, you know, are the three stooges. It's lovely.
Mm-hmm. It is lovely.
I appreciate you bringing this to my attention. Sometimes I feel there's a hall of mirrors effect where it's like I say to myself, well, starting to say things to myself right away, you know, I'm saying things to myself. But I'll say to myself, you know, I could just be a little wiser and follow the aerodynamics of the Dharma as laid out, I wouldn't be suffering so much. Mm-hmm. I could just do a little. I could practice more, wiser. I wouldn't suffer so much. And on the other hand, I say, if I were only a little bit wiser, I wouldn't be torturing myself with the idea that if I were wiser. <Yeah.
laughs> And you could go on for
That's what I'm saying.
The dog chasing
That's
its tail.
Well, and to see that, to begin to whatever level we catch it at. I think that part of the teaching is that there is some possibility for freedom in the middle of the particular constraint we're at.
Yeah.
And the constraint may be, if I were wiser, I wouldn't do, you know, the thing that I wouldn't wish I were wiser, wherever it is. There's some encouragement to stop and take a breath where we find ourselves.
Or laugh.
Or what?
Laugh.
Or laugh, yeah. Yeah, right. Here I am again. Yeah.
What were you going to say?
Well, and really, I mean, I really did have this feeling, you know, that here I am wandering around looking for inspiration and insight. And, you know, as if that, you know, that's some text I can find or some point I can get to and... you know, finding it just in the act of wandering around with other people looking for inspiration. All chasing our tails together.
Mm-hmm. You came to the right place for that.
That's why I love it here.
I love how you're also pointing to the, you know, the character in the story who, you know, seems to have certainty, you know, and we can see that in ourselves, you know. So we're the certain fool, you know, quite.
Yeah.
I always remember James Ford one time talking about ignorance among the three poisons, you know, greed, anger, ignorance, and his view that certainty is actually ignorance, you know, because it just blocks out everything, you know. You just hold to this one narrow view, and yeah. So you're taking us through these various characters, you know, shows so many of our human characteristics and, you know, how we get caught. And so it's very lovely. Thank you.
I certainly know that when I snap out of it and see that I've been in that certain state, that is really where I'm on the least solid ground. I mean, in my experience, my transgressions, if you will, not showing up the way I really want to show up in a relationship or in a work context or whatever is so often tied to that, you know, that being in that knowing certain mind, not just being genuinely curious, what is this? Mm-hmm. What is this?
Yeah.
And I love the I don't know what the phrase the circumfool, I think you said. Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful way to express. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So thank you, Jeff, for pointing that out about the Emperor Wu character. I hadn't really thought about it exactly that way. How his not quite getting what's going on, and yet, you know, so here's the Emperor of China. There's really no reason in the world why he needs to put himself in this position.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how wonderful that he's willing to make himself vulnerable in order, because he really has this desire to know, and he surrounds himself with these people and invites them to teach stuff to the Emperor of China. I was just reading, it's probably a different emperor, but in one of the koans, it talks about how the emperor so venerated the national teacher that he would always greet and say goodbye to him himself, and that he actually pushed his teacher's cart, whatever that is, that the emperor would take the national teacher's cart and push it for him because he so wanted to know, and surrounded himself and was willing to do that. It's really the humility of that character has always struck me. You know, what is this guy doing here? You know, inviting these people to tell him these things that he doesn't quite get, and he doesn't actually chop their heads off in the story, but he could, right? And he doesn't.
Well, and interesting to think of that emperor inside, the ruler of what we let in and what we let out. I mean, all of us rule our internal universe. And oftentimes when something comes that's unsettling to us, we just chop its head off, right? No, I won't talk to you again. Right? You, how dare you say that to me? I will not play with you anymore, taking my toys and going home. But this, the possibility of the emperor or the executor or whoever we think was running the show might be willing to be destabilized, might be secure enough to explore what it is to be insecure. Yeah, quite a thing, quite an amazing thing.
Yeah, tying these together, I mean, I had this image in your... how lovely that the emperor seemed to sort of play his role and not be constrained by his role. You know, how much must be projected onto the emperor, how much people must expect heads rolling, and yet he has the curiosity, the humility. We're idealizing here, of course, but to play the role, but not play it in the stereotypical way.
Mm-hmm.
But and relative to individual practice, I think to actually practice Zen requires quite a well-developed ego, you know, in some way, because to be willing to come out on a cold Thursday night or to, you know, sit for a day or two or whatever, there has to be some clear intention and has to be some way, and all of us here have made real choices in our life and not just drifting along and said, yes, I'll come here. I'm really playing that role. Well, I think we have all been astounded. So let's sit for a few more minutes and then we'll do 2 minutes.